Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spatch.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic, as I always say.
I've had a few t-shirt weather days this week.
It's been nice.
Yeah, yeah.
We also had a few days that were kind of cold. There was a, so over, was it Mike Burns and Scott? Are they there now? I can't remember when they're coming back, but French River.
Yep.
And so on the weekend, it was Sunday morning, and it was like I looked at the weather, and overnight it had been -2, and they were there for that. It's like, ooh.
Right? -2 Celsius.
I still wish I could have made it work. I wish I could have gone, but too many strings to pull. It would have owed people.
And when you're sitting there and you're seeing -2, you're sort of, half of you is thinking, woohoo, thank you for not pulling strings.
Yes, I know, right?
Part of you wants to do it, and part of you's like, all right, well, I dodged a bullet there.
Would have been fun, though. Getting out with the guys is always fun.
Well, I am on my first canoe trip of the season this coming weekend.
Oh, yes.
4 days.
Yep.
Do some trout fishing and some exploring. Now, the gang are all Nova crafters.
Oh, okay.
And I've got the Swift. And there was a comment made about, well, you know, everybody doesn't like my Swift, being the other person.
Yeah.
So we're taking somebody's Nova craft. I'm thinking, well, I'm still working off my winter fat to be carrying a 90-pound Nova craft for a 1 kilometer portage.
Oh, my.
I've done it before.
Yeah,
you know,
still.
But it's just like, you know, it's too early in this season for that garbage. So I'll be bringing my my Swift, probably that's half the weight. But don't be surprised if I show up with the Nova craft. It'll be a game time decision. So we'll see what happens.
Canoe snobs.
Right. No, you know what? No, it's just preferences and stuff. But if I had a lighter weight one, I'd definitely take the Nova craft. But
yeah,
like I say, I got this thing for not for interior trips with 1 to 2 kilometer portage. Well, there's another portage. If we go to a couple of lakes, I think there's like a 1,300 meter portage.
Oof.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And then, so you go to that lake for the day and then you come back.
Yeah.
So it's like 2.5 kilometers of 90 pound canoe.
What's the 5 kilometer one in Algonquin? It's
the Dixon Bonfield.
Dixon Bonfield.
Yeah. Yeah. We did that.
That's fun.
Right? That was good. That was groovy. I would do that one 4 or 5 more times.
Well, what was interesting, though, we did stop and check out some of the ruins of the old, like, what was it, a town site or something one time?
Oh, the old logging camp, yeah.
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 So that was neat. It's nice to see that in the middle and see the old basements that are there because all the wood's gone.
Yeah, and there was that nice bench seat thing halfway down we sat on. And
oh, yes, 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 right? Yeah.
Just to test it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that we were hurting. We were just testing it out.
Exactly. We weren't dying at the moment.
And then there was that nice little, at the end, hearing you yell, oh my God, we're here already.
Yeah, yeah. It was surprising. But suddenly it just opens up.
Because it opens up and we're
it's
at
like,
the end.
What? Like,
yeah, yes. Gotta love that. But so I'm on my four-day canoe trip. Like I say, I'm looking forward to doing some trout fishing.
Yeah.
Sitting around a fire and getting out of the city, it's just been way too
long. I know, right?
It's been way too long.
Mm-hmm.
Since last...
When does trout season open?
I think it opened last weekend.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I know for sure it's open this weekend, but... so we'll see what happens. And then I'm got 4 days of work, and then I'm up to Temagami for 3 days.
Right on.
Right?
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. 2 weekends in a row. Last year was taking, you know what, like I say, I know I've said it before, but the last 2 years with family stuff and going to Japan and stuff like that.
It's
and
been busy.
It's been really busy.
Yep.
And just trying to get out to all the trips we're usually going on. And it's just like, yeah, we're not doing that this year. We're not doing that this year. But this year, 2026, we'll be back to.
It's the year of the canoe.
Knock on wood. Normal.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Got my new roof racks installed.
I saw right? that your dog was supervising the whole ordeal.
My new truck is about 8 inches wider. 8 inches wider than the old one.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. But the racks still work. They yep. still fit and everything like that. I just had to buy the new feet for it to, mm-hmm. to clamp on and whatnot. The goalpost still fits on. I totally forgot because my old goalpost, or the goalpost on my old truck,
yep.
I used to hook it underneath the metal bumper, right?
Yep.
Having a new truck, you forget you have it, the oil spray underneath.
Oh.
So I reached under to put the thingy. So, oh, man. Oil all over my yeah. hands. Yeah. And but everything works. Everything fits. Everything's groovy. Everything's working fantastic. Ready to go into the canoe and do some serious paddling. Some portaging, some fishing, some Excellent. Eating some food.
Nice.
Looking forward to it. And you know the perfect place to go paddling?
Water?
Well, yes, but it would be in the paddling capital of California.
Oh, yes.
You like that? You like
nice
that?
Nice segue.
Folsom, California has a new identity, and it involves a paddle. The Northern California city has declared itself the paddling capital of California.
And why not?
Why not? Are you allowed to give yourself a nickname?
Absolutely.
Alrighty.
Don't you call yourself a goober?
Well, I call us goobers. A couple of goobers that just yabber.
Yeah.
City has just launched a destination brand calling itself the Paddling Capital of California, leaning into the water recreation that has quietly made Folsom one of the best spots in the Sacramento region for kayaking, paddleboarding, canoeing, and other non-motorized water sports. The branding highlights Folsom Lake, Lake Natoma, and American River as the foundation for the city's outdoor recreation identity. Lake Natoma in particular has become a popular spot for flat water paddling, with calm conditions, scenic views, and easy access from several launch points along the shore. American River Parkway connects the two, creating a continuous corridor for paddlers who want to explore beyond a single body of water. Which is really cool, because you paddle one lake,
yep.
then you take the rivers, and then get to another lake, and you can paddle that one, and then you take the river back.
Yeah.
So you get a good day of paddling out of that, right? The campaign is a collaboration between Visit Folsom and Choose Folsom, the city's Chamber of Commerce. Folsom has Lake Natoma, which the campaign says caters to beginners, families, and competitive paddlers, citing the lake's 5 mile per hour speed limit. Slow down there, Derek. Yes. It also has Folsom Lake, which offers opportunities for distance and open water exploration. This is a natural evolution for Folsom, Visit Folsom Chief Executive Officer Joe Gagliardi wrote in a statement. We have two incredible waterways, experienced outfitters, and a growing paddling community with a long and distinguished history. With this launch, we're telling that story in a bold, unified way that inspires visitors to come experience it for themselves.
Hmm.
It's a good idea.
It is.
Right? Folsom Lake was near capacity heading into peak paddling season and is at 94% of capacity, according to the California Department of Water Resources. That's well above the historical average, sitting 6 feet below capacity.
I looked it up on Google Maps, and I was like, huh, I knew there was a Folsom prison.
Right?
I knew there was, I didn't know it was next to a Folsom lake. And I've never looked it up before. Now I look, it's very close to the, it's like 100 kilometers from Sacramento.
And I bet you if you look, there's probably a train track there too.
There is.
Because you can hear that train a-coming.
Yes. But yeah, I had never thought of where Folsom Prison was before until this, or you right? sent me this.
Right.
And so it's interesting. What's also interesting is, of course, you're going to, I do Google Maps, I do Street View, I do whatever. And there's, I want to say there used to be a lot more posted photos on Maps before. I don't know why, but within the last year, a lot of photos seem to be coming down. So I was only able to find a few. There's a bunch in a park, but anything in common areas or in like outside of parks, for some reason, Google's taking them down.
Really?
I was looking for photos of the dam at Folsom Lake because there's a hydroelectric project there. And you go through the street view and you can go through the last 11, 12 years of every time the Google car drives by. And so you could see them building a sluiceway in about 2018, 2017. And so it was interesting, but only street view was available. I couldn't find too many photos. The little blue dots on the map.
Maybe the people there are just not allowed to take photos because there's a prison nearby.
Maybe, sure. But I see it around here, too. There's photos that I'm used to seeing online on Google Maps that are disappearing. I've gone and looked at some before and gone back. It's like, hey, that photo I remember is gone now.
Do they have a like lifespan or something on there?
I don't know. But I know you can do request takedowns if somebody's offended by the photo.
I put mine up. Yeah. When I do some of my fancy black and white stuff, I'll put it up there. Mm-hmm. And there's people comment on it, too.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
So.
I've got a lot of photos on Google Maps, too, that just, like, you can go and check out my photos that I've uploaded. Some of them are viewed thousands and more times, so. Interesting.
You're talking those pictures of you wearing Daisy Dukes on the beach and stuff like that in different locations?
The one that's viewed the most is the bell tent at Mule Lake in,
that's like ages ago.
Yeah. Thousands and thousands of views.
Cool. Lake Natoma hosts the Powerhouse Ministries Dragon Boat Festival each spring, where teams race at Black Miners Bar. The Intercollegiate Rowing Association National Championship Regatta also brings collegiate athletes to the city, and that's set for May 29th and 31st this year. These activities bring tourism and economic activity to Folsom. Folsom's waterways are one of our greatest natural assets, Mayor Justin Raithiel wrote on a statement. This initiative not only celebrates recreation, it strengthens our local economy, supporting small businesses, increasing tourism, and encouraging visitors to stay longer and explore more. New Brand is part of a broader push by the city to attract visitors who might not think of Folsom as an outdoor recreation destination. While the city is well known for its historic district, the prison, and the Johnny Cash connection, the paddling angle taps into a growing market of people looking for accessible, affordable outdoor activities close to Sacramento. Paddleboard and kayak rentals are available at several locations around Lake Natoma and Folsom Lake during the summer months. No prior experience is needed for most flat water paddling, making it a good option for families and beginners. But there's a lot of that. Like, even here, there's a, let's get an hour out of the city and see if we can find some place to go paddling or something like that. Because you don't want to do it in the city.
No.
Right?
Although it could be interesting. Like, we've been out on
We've
done it. And we've been downtown Toronto at, like, midnight or something on the water in the harbor trying to not get run over by party boats. But, it's neat to be in the city, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree.
I think that's more hardcore people that do that sort of thing, though.
I do agree. It's more preferable to be out in the quiet where all you can hear is the birds and the bugs and so on, right?
Get into the nature and it's nice flat water. Yeah. Nice. You're not dodging party boats or airplanes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's pretty cool. The paddling capital of California.
Mm-hmm.
California.
Self-labeled, of course, but hey.
But that's okay. Maybe if it's going to get people to get out there, then so be it.
If you build it, they will come.
Right? We need to go to Folsom.
Yes.
Not the prison. Just to Folsom.
And Sacramento, isn't it? Where, I had it in my head.
Mork and Mindy? No, that was Boulder, Colorado.
No. John Ritter.
Oh, Three's Company.
Three's Company.
Were they in Sacramento?
I think they're in Sacramento.
Do you still remember that TV show?
I do.
Do you know why?
Why?
Because you're old.
Do you know something else about that show?
I know a lot about the show.
So the two of the main characters, or one of the main characters, there's the...
Joyce DeWitt, Suzanne Summers.
Suzanne Summers.
John Ritter.
John Ritter.
Norman Lear.
Norman Lear. And that's the one, the last one.
Mrs. Roper.
Mrs. Roper.
They so, do. There's a big following for her.
It's huge. They
have
like
parties
pub, and pub crawls.
Right?
And so you see like 50 like Mrs.
Dressed
Ropers.
Up in the muumuus.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
I keep coming across these photos of all these Mrs. Roper gatherings.
Yeah.
It's just everybody in these red bouffant wigs. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't know that was a thing. That looks so fun.
Right? And that's why Derek owns a bouffant wig.
It looks so fun. It's like so crazy.
Yeah. You know what? Sometimes that's all it takes, man. That's all it takes. Yes. Just something like that.
But can you imagine a room, 50 people all in this restaurant or this pub, and it's like, whoa, what's
all looking
going
like
on?
Mrs. Roper. And then you walk in.
It's like, whoa, how come nobody told me?
Oh, man. I used to watch those shows when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
There was some good stuff on. Some stuff on TV back then you would never get away with now.
Oh.
Like Archie Bunker, the Jeffersons,
there's
and stuff
a lot
like
of stuff.
That. There's a lot of shows.
Times have changed.
You would not get away with now. But there was some stuff on there that you look at, like the Bunkers and stuff like that.
Oh.
Do you know who the first man and wife in bed on TV were?
No.
Fred and Wilma Flintstone.
Oh, yes. I think
right?
I heard that somewhere. Yeah.
But Archie Bunker there, All in the Family, they were the first ones to talk about rape and abuse.
They
and,
were groundbreaking in their time.
Yeah, they really were.
Groundbreaking in their time.
Yeah. Everybody looks at, you know, Archie being the, you know.
A racist, misogynist. Yeah.
But some of the stuff they covered on that show was like, yeah, groundbreaking. Like people mm-hmm. didn't want to touch that, mm-hmm. those topics.
Yes. Oh, so. Exactly.
And then there was the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour. And to this day, I have never strapped a rocket to my back and put on roller skates.
I know. See, it influenced me so much.
It did not influence me at all. I am not denying I didn't think about it.
This
I never
this
actually
work?
Did it. Yeah, yeah. 70s and 80s TV shows yeah. were the bomb, man.
This whole conversation came out of the fact that Sacramento is very close to Folsom Lake.
Prison. Thank you, Johnny Cash. So I was doing some reading.
Yes.
Came across an article by Mary Andino. Her article was geared more towards backpacking trips, but yeah. for canoe tripping and stuff, this totally relates.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell you, after reading this, I'm really hungry now.
Right? I am totally taking some of this.
Oh, I'm doing this.
I'm
doing this. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
One of my earliest food memories is sitting at the kitchen counter spooning grated Parmesan cheese into my mouth as a child while my mom cooked dinner.
My kids do this.
As someone who grew up in an Italian household, real whole blocks of aged Parmigiano Reggiano is as much a pantry essential as salt, pepper, or oil. And I take it she's not talking the old Kraft sprinkle cheese.
Yes, exactly. Not the fake stuff.
Not the fake stuff. While I always keep several blocks of Parmesan at home, I never thought to bring it on a backcountry into the backcountry. However, I decided to take a block on a backpacking trip, and it changed everything. Now, no packing list for a trip is complete without a hunk of Parmesan, and I firmly believe it's worth the weight and space in your pack, because it is heavy.
It is heavy, yeah, but you know what? There's always luxury items, and
yeah.
and 95% of the time, the canoe's carrying it, not you.
And for one person or two people, it's not yeah. like you need... I mean, they sell them in these, like... 85-pound wheels.
Yes.
One of those wheels is almost the same weight as my Novacraft canoe.
When we were reading through, I was Googling where I could get Parmesan, and I found a wheel of Parmesan. It was 83.8 pounds.
For $1,500.
$1,500 at Costco.
Costco. Get it from Costco.
That's a little much.
Halfers?
Yeah. Split it. The 40 pounds is much more reasonable.
There's no way I could eat 85 pounds of cheese, but maybe 42 and a half pounds. Maybe that's more doable. Yes. Yeah. Earlier this year, I aimed to produce as little trash as possible while on a four-day backpacking trip in California. In preparation, I grabbed rice and pasta from the bulk bins at my local grocery store. To add calories, fat, and flavor without creating much waste, I allowed myself one large block of Irish butter. I don't know what Irish butter is.
I don't know. Is it like the ghee?
No, that's from India, I
it's
believe.
It's just Irish butter. I know New Zealand is well known for its grass-fed butter.
Yeah. I bet you it's along the same lines.
Yeah.
And a hunk of Parmesan, since they came in minimal packaging. I used those items to what I affectionately called dirt bag mac and cheese. Which is why Derek is now drooling.
I've circled that one.
He circled it in highlighter, pink highlighter even. I cooked pasta in my pot until it was done. Then I drained it, keeping a little pasta water. I added butter and Parmesan cheese, stirred until it made a kind of sauce. Finally, I added some garlic powder and black pepper.
Mm.
My homemade roasted garlic powder would probably be really good in that too. Honestly, it was better than several dehydrated meals I've had in the past. After eating this for a few days, I became a disciple of the Church of Parmigiano Reggiano. Besides the obvious fact that this is a delicious, tasty cheese, there are several reasons why it's become a staple in my pack. While its flavor is best preserved if stored in the fridge, since Parm is a very hard cheese, it's safe to store in whole blocks at room temperature for a few days. I've eaten Parmesan that's been unrefrigerated for a week and felt totally fine. I've taken cheese before, and they say the older you take the cheese, the better.
Exactly. Right? The harder the cheese, like a fresh cheese. It
gets all oily and
greasy. Yeah, it gets oily, greasy, starts to melt a bit and squish, and it's unappetizing.
Well, it's those green highlights by the end of the week that sort of do it for me.
Wait a sec.
Those green and blue highlights on that cheese.
I got to rub this on my leg.
Yeah. Don't take my word for it. According to the Parmigiano Reggiano Consortium, the cheese can be left at room temperature for several days without suffering any damage. Be sure to wrap it tightly. Tragically, I both love cheese and am lactose intolerant. Parmesan is one of the few cheeses I can eat without upsetting my stomach. Because nothing says being on a canoe trip for a week with an upset stomach.
Exactly. Sean after having some corn.
Right. In the manufacturing process, all the lactose in the cheese is converted to lactic acid, so the cheese is naturally lactose free.
Perfect.
Right? From a nutrition perspective, Parmesan punches above its weight. A 1 ounce serving provides 10 grams of protein.
There's a lot of points here that people should listen, because this is just basically a 1 ounce portion.
Yep. 10 grams of protein, which is more than 1 ounce of chicken, which is 9 grams, or nuts, 6 grams. While backpackers typically focus on eating carbs for energy, and that's certainly important, they should also shouldn't overlook their protein intake. Getting adequate protein is important for muscle recovery after long days on the trail or long days paddling and portaging heavy canoes. 1 ounce also has 7 grams of fat and 111 calories. When you're doing high mileage days on the trail, it can be difficult to get in enough calories, and a calorie dense food like Parmesan can help. 1 ounce also has 26% of your daily value of calcium.
It's like a superfood.
Now, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here, but who's only going to eat 1 ounce? Seriously now. That's like, I saw a little thing there on social media that the bacon companies are now putting comedy on the back of their bacon.
Oh, yep.
The bacon packages. Like, you turn it over and it reads, one serving, two strips. Really? Who's going to eat
I know.
Strips of bacon? Who's going to eat 1 ounce of... So you're going to get more.
Yes.
If you eat more. I mean, I'm not saying it would be walking down the trail or paddling across the lake, mowing down on a brick of cheese, Derek. Let's face it. Even the best packaged backpacking meals begin to taste lackluster after several days on the trail. When rehydrated pasta and rice dishes start to feel blah, Parm brings a boost of flavor.
Be a big treat.
Wouldn't it? True Parmesan is aged 24 to 36 months, and this aging process produces those salty little crystals that make the cheese so delicious. Essentially, in the aging process, tyrosine, an amino acid present in milk proteins, breaks down and crystallizes. It's widely recognized, and see, we're learning a whole bunch of new science-y stuff here, too, that Parmesan is an excellent source of umami.
A typical umami flavor.
The fifth flavor whose savory, slightly meaty profile adds instant depth to food. According to a 2024 scientific study, umami is more complex than the other four flavors, sweet, salty, sour, and bitter. And actually enhances them.
What's a key? Do you know what a key umami flavor that has been blacklisted mostly out of mostly
kale?
Ignorance? MSG.
MSG. Was that an umami flavor?
Yes, MSG is an umami flavor.
Really? Oh, gotta have my umami.
Mm-hmm.
Adding umami flavor enhancers can be a compelling option to increase the taste of low sodium products, as it can amplify the perceived salty nature of the food. I find that after days on the trail eating gummies and granola, I'm craving salt and umami.
Oh, yeah.
And Parmesan quickly satisfies that hankering.
Or a salt lick.
Or a salt lick. See, and I'm just the opposite. I always, at the end of the day, I'm always craving sweets.
Hmm.
So that's why my trail mix always has like big, like chocolate covered raisins and peanuts and M&Ms. And
we always buy the more popular trail mix in our family is it's a mix of everything. It's got like sweet and sour. It's got the jelly beans and the chocolate covered this and that and the other thing. And it's just, there's no end to irritation when you catch out of the corner of your eye, you see the kids picking and choosing out of the container.
Oh, highballing. Like,
stop.
High grading.
That.
High grading. Yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? It's like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, dump it in your hand, eat what you get.
Yep. High grading is not good.
If you don't keep an eye out, all that's left is like the peanuts and the stuff they don't like.
Pumpkin
like,
seeds.
Wait a second. What happened to this trail mix?
Oh, look at that. This trail mix. Yeah. One M&M. Yeah.
And the kids are going, what? I missed that one.
For lunch on the trail, I don't like to cook since it takes too much time. I do, however, need something substantial to keep me going. I typically cut off several slices of Parmesan with my knife, sandwich that between some pretzels, and add some salted nuts or salami. It's my version of trail charcuterie board, and it always hits the spot.
It does sound good.
I do that as well. I'll get the pepperoni sticks with the cheese string, and then I eat that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call true Parmigiano Reggiano imported from Italy cheap. It retails for $22 a pound at my local store. However, an $11 half-pound block will last me an entire week on the trail. That's less than the price of one freeze-dried backpacking meal, which can retail from $12 to $17. You don't need to add much pasta or ramen for it to deliver a wow factor. I think ramen noodles, like I'll get the ramen soups.
Yep.
And just use the noodles.
Okay.
I'll boil the hot water, put the noodles so they get soft, and drain the water out, and just use the noodles. I don't use the packets of soup mix and all that. I just got the ramen noodles sometimes, which is perfect, right? Or you can add some of the soup mix for some flavor.
Yeah.
You don't need to add much to pasta or ramen for it to deliver a wow factor. Yes, you're paying a premium, but that is because it's a high-quality, well-made ingredient. We all have those foods that remind us of our childhood or home and makes us feel warm and fuzzy. Parm is that food for me. Backpacking can be mentally challenging, and food can be a major source of emotional energy and comfort. So we know when you see somebody back there sitting around the fire in their chair and just mowing down on a brick of
Parmesan cheese. Hey, how's it going over there?
I'm okay. I had a rough day. Ultralighters.
My comfort food.
Mowing down on a brick of cheese. Ultralighters might scoff at the idea of bringing a half pound of cheese with them on a hike, but I will happily carry a few extra ounces for everything I get out of Parmesan. While every item in my backpack serves a purpose, there's only one item in my kit that delivers nutrition, energy, and positivity, and I can get it at almost any grocery store. And now we are going to have to be bringing Parmesan cheese. Every. And you know what happens with stuff like that?
It goes too quick.
No, then next thing you know, you're on a trip with like 12 people and everybody's got a half a brick of because you've taught that, you've given that
exactly.
tip to them.
Yeah.
And then everybody's, that's like with the, we do the strawberries in marshmallow fluff.
We've tried that. It's right? It's really good.
And yeah, and you bring, and everybody goes, oh my God, those are, you brought some of those. Are you bringing those? Are you bringing those again? Are you bringing those? Because if you don't bring them, I'm bringing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, those are so good over the fire. Instead of just regular marshmallows.
Yeah.
Coat a strawberry in fluff. Marshmallow fluff.
Yeah.
And roast it like a regular marshmallow. Mm-hmm. It heats the strawberry up on the inside.
Yeah.
And you pop it in your mouth in just one go. And when you squish it, all the warm juices and strawberry flavor enhanced.
If you cook it slow, let it cook slow, and it heats up the strawberry, and the strawberry, like the juice starts to come out of the strawberry. So when you bite into it, it's just like, it's like drinking strawberry juice. It's just so good.
With a marshmallow.
Mm-hmm.
I am getting hungry now.
I need a nice dirt bag mac and cheese. Some fluff covered strawberries for dessert.
Something got to try at home first, Stephen.
Yes.
Again and again.
Yeah.
What else we got here? Oh, didn't realize this, but apparently this is a thing. Ditch the crowded hill stations this summer. Explore India's serene mangrove forests through kayaking. A peaceful, movie-like escape that travel experts call the ultimate nature therapy for a quiet vacation. Summer vacations are just around the corner, and this year, instead of the usual mountain or beach getaway, consider a truly unique adventure, mangrove kayaking. Apparently, this is becoming a thing. People are taking their, day trips and stuff like that. And going kayaking in the mangroves. Because it's different than going up and down a river or out on a big body of water and
whatnot. You're basically weaving through a forest of trees poking up through water.
Yeah. Imagine gliding silently in a small kayak through a serene maze of lush mangrove forests. Away from noisy crowds, you enter a hidden, tranquil world where the water lies mirror still. Sunlight filters gently through the dense canopy, and the only sounds are the soft splash of your paddle and the melodious bird song.
So, quick question.
Yep.
What kind of animals do they have in India that...
Snakes.
Because when I think of mangroves, I think of alligators and stuff like in Florida.
Yeah.
So I assume they don't have that. I don't know.
I'm not going to think about it. Peaceful, green, and refreshingly different, mangrove kayaking offers a magical escape that makes you feel like a true explorer discovering a secret paradise. Many people wonder how this is different from rowing a boat in a normal river or the sea. The experience is much deeper and more personal. Instead of being in the open sun or fighting big waves, you move through narrow, shaded paths made by tree roots.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Especially over in India where the sun's beating down all the time.
Yeah.
Like to get out into some shade.
It'd be amazing.
I probably wouldn't come back.
I wouldn't do it in Florida, but I would do it in India.
Pythons, alligators.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff that'll kill you and eat you in Florida.
Yeah. Florida, the wannabe Australia.
I'm sure the Floridians, anybody listening, are going, what a wuss. It's not that bad here. It's quite safe. It's like, well, you don't know. Like, I'm sure if somebody from Florida came to Canada and goes, oh, the bears.
Right? No, you got to go to Hokkaido for the bears.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of, Katmai National Park.
Oh.
The bears are making the emergence. Chunk is back, and yep, a couple of others are starting to make their appearance from hibernation.
Yellowstone, too.
Yeah.
And somebody got attacked 2 days ago.
Ooh.
They didn't die, but they got attacked, got mauled.
Were they trying to hug the bear?
If not friend, why friend shape?
Right?
So the bears are coming out of hibernation. They're hungry. They're angry. They're probably have cubs,
mm-hmm,
right? Because they would have given birth through the winter in their little caves. But,
everything's out to get you. Mr. Rakant Pitti, CEO and co-founder of Ease My Trip, says the mangrove kayaking offers a far more immersive and experience-led alternative to traditional river or sea kayaking. It takes travelers through narrow, shaded tidal creeks with dense ecosystems where the focus shifts from activity to exploration and engagement with biodiversity. From what we are observing on our platform, there is growing preference for such low-impact, nature-driven experiences, particularly during the summer months when travelers are actively seeking cooler and more tranquil outdoor activities. For many, entering these water paths feels like stepping into a movie. The silence and the greenery makes it feel like a different planet. Mukul Kundra, co-founder and chief product officer of Exploro AI, says that he grew up watching nature channels like Discovery and National Geographic. He said the mangrove kayaking seemed similar to the expeditions they do in the Amazon forest, so it was always on his bucket list.
Hmm.
I visited Pichavuram mangrove forest, and it was something like a dream of a kid getting fulfilled. Mangrove kayaking connects you to nature. You can hear a lot of sounds, which are soothing to your ears. I have done a lot of water sports, but this one was different from all. Adventurous and soothing at the same time. It is like therapy. And it would be, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you think it's like nice, cool, and you're hearing the birds and stuff like that. I've seen them fly around. And, and you're just like weaving in and out.
And there's a multitude of paths that you can take. It's not just a straight line. You're going down a creek or a river. Mm-hmm. It's like you can just weave in amongst the trees.
Which is cool.
Yeah. So many snakes you can find.
Yeah. India has some very famous mangrove areas, but there are also many hidden gems that are perfect if you want to avoid too many tourists. While the Andaman and Nicobar Islands and the Sundarbans are very well known, more people are now starting to explore new places, Pitti says, that they are seeing a lot of interest in lesser-known spots.
Go ahead, say it.
Bhitarkanika National Park, Pichavaram Mangrove Forest, and parts of the Godavari Delta. See?
I have no idea if you said those right.
Neither do I. No, I do the spelling thingy check as much as I can. These destinations offer dense mangrove networks and quieter kayaking routes, making them particularly appealing to travelers looking to move beyond mainstream options. This also reflects a broader shift towards offbeat, experience-led, and eco-focused travel choices. That's the one thing is, and I've talked about it before, is getting away from the regular paddling stuff.
Something new, something different, something unique.
Because everybody, we're doing this big river way up north, and we're doing this big river way up north.
The one that everybody goes to.
Yeah. And it's like, well, what about this new spot? Not many people go to that one. Let's check that out. It doesn't have the big name.
Yep. Exactly.
And then you find out. And then, you find, next time you go, you can't get a spot because it's so popular. I was there before it was popular.
Yeah.
If you want to have the best experience, you need to plan according to the weather and the tides. Best season for kayaking in India is usually from October to May. During the summer, the mangroves stay cooler than the city, but it is still best to go early in the morning or late in the evening. Morning light is perfect for Insta-worthy photos, and the birds are most active then. It is also very important to check tide timings. When the tide is high, the water fills the narrow gaps between the trees, allowing you to paddle deep into the forest. If the tide is too low, the water might be too shallow for your boat to move. So you might end up way deep in the forest with no way back.
And sitting duck for the snakes.
You do not need to be a professional to enjoy this, but you need to wear the right clothes. Since you will be around water and mud in a humid environment, you should be prepared. Pity says that for the first time mangrove kayaking, comfort and preparedness is key. Travelers should opt for lightweight, quick-drying clothing, along with footwear suited for wet conditions. Essentials such as insect repellent, sun protection, hydration, and waterproof storage for personal belongings can significantly enhance the experience. Further, opting for guided tours and being mindful of local tide and weather conditions can help ensure both safety and a smoother overall outing. Yeah, I mean, if you want to get the lowdown on it, too, if it's your first time, you
might
look at a guide, too, right? So that they can take you in there and go, this is what this is, this is what this is. Derek, don't touch that. It is really peaceful and soothing. Now, trying kayaking at different locations is on my bucket list, says McCool Kundra. It says, whether you're looking for adventure or just a way to relax your mind, gliding through the green tunnels of the mangrove forest is something everyone should try at least once.
That sounds so appealing.
Doesn't it?
And it just reminds you of scenes you see in, like, movies of people rowing or paddling through mangrove forests and so on. It's just like, it's, oh, yeah, I've seen that so many times in movies. It's it's a common theme of movies that are, you know, filmed in those locations. It's like, I've never thought I'd ever go, but, and you don't think of the possibility, but it's like, you know what, maybe I should, you know, it's one of those things. It's, I should try that.
And I believe the Pacharavarum mangrove forest is the second largest mangrove forest in the world.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
so you can get a lot of paddling done in there. Touch on a couple of things from last week we talked about.
Yes.
Do you remember when I was saying surfing? I wonder if the sharks are just there for some fun. And I would probably, if one was right next to me, step my foot on it. And what did we see 2 days later?
Oh, yes.
A surfer. Somebody was looking at the surfer, and there was a shark.
But
right next to him.
Yes. I've seen videos like that before. The one that was shared, though, I think was AI. But I have seen where people are surfing and you can see a shark in the wave in behind them. You can see the shadow. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. No, there was a couple of them that were out. And I think there was a surf was postponed because there were sharks in the area as well, sort of thing. So
yes, but there's been a few competitions.
One pops up, and I'm thinking, did we not just have this conversation?
I know.
Why is dude full on his board and not 1 foot on the shark? That's all I could think of at the time. The Philippines, we were talking about everybody's, you know, the fisher people are going back to using paddles instead of the boats because of the gas.
Yes.
Right? So southeast of the Philippines is Fiji. Assistant Minister in the Office of the Prime Minister, Sakusa Tubuna, has called on Fijian villages and communities to use horses and traditional canoes to cut their dependence on fuel as global oil prices continue to rise. Mr. Tubuna said crude oil prices have jumped from around $62 US, which is 137 Fijian dollars per barrel, to about 115 US or 253 Fijian dollars. So $137 to $253 a barrel, putting severe pressure on Fiji as a small island nation heavily reliant on imported fuel. He said communities need to go back to the basics, reviving traditional sailing canoes, using horses for transport, growing their own food, switching to solar energy and biogas from pig farming. Villages should be supported so that they can maximize the use of transportation system to coordinate with other villages, adding that outboard motors should be avoided where possible. On food security, Mr. Tabuna said a bundle of fish now costs $60 or more because of fuel costs, and village farming needs to be intensified to reduce reliance on imported food. Places that have become reliant on fuel to survive, going back to the old ways, is becoming, I think, a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right? I mean, they as much as it is convenient and faster with the engines, boat motors,
yeah,
they still have the traditional know-how from before, boat motors. So getting out in their big canoes, their sailing canoes, their paddling canoes, that sort of stuff to do their fishing and stuff.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's the way of the world right now, and if you can't afford the... If it comes down to either paddling or putting fuel in your boat motor...
Well, exactly.
That affects your family's food and stuff, right?
It is a complicated... It makes things more complicated now when money's tight and fuel costs are so high. It's like people are starting to look for alternatives. And unless we redevelop old options, like, what was it, during Second World War, there was in England and the U.S. and Canada, there was a lot of people that were using, it was like a wood-fired, wood gas. It's a wood gas. So, and... me and a guy at work were looking into it just last week, where you, in a auction low container, you burn the wood, and the wood gas is piped off directly into a modern engine, and you can burn that wood gas right in the engine and drive your car with it, right?
Really?
Yeah, it was very common during World War II when fuel rationing was happening, so people were just... burning wood and driving cars with it. Like if you have a sealed container and you're burning the wood with a limited amount of oxygen it gets in to feed the fire, it's not a full burn and the gases that come off is very flammable. And so it's we watched a few videos and it's like, yeah, it's very efficient, but it takes about an hour to warm it up and get it going before you can go anywhere. It's like, huh.
I'm going to be late for work again.
It takes a little bit of pre-planning.
Yeah. I'm just going to go with the old steam engine car.
But there are units where you can use that wood gas fired to run a generator and a blackout for your home and so on, right? Where you're just burning wood, burning waste.
Yeah. You know what? It comes to it. You got to go back to the old ways of doing things. Then
there it is.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to do it. Devon is in the southwest of England along the English Channel, west of London. South Devon Brewery has announced a new charity beer, brings a tear to my eye, with a major international paddleboarding event coming to the region this summer. Bay's Brewery has unveiled a float. A 4.3 pale ale brewed in partnership with Above Water, a Torbay-based charity focused on drowning prevention and water safety education. The beer, described as copper-colored pale ale with citrus and fruity notes, will go on sale across Devon in early May. The brewery says 5% of proceeds will go directly to Above Water's awareness programs. So any of our... listeners over in England, if you grab a can of that.
Yeah. So it's Torbay based. It's for, it's a charity for drowning prevention and water safety education.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
Very, very important. Like I say, you just Google things like kayaking, canoeing, paddling, and the amount of bad news reports you find.
We would have unlimited topics to talk about if we wanted to be a dark podcast.
Yeah. Brewery says 5% of proceeds will go directly to Above Water's awareness programs. Launch comes after the International Canoe Federation, the ICF, Stand-Up Paddle World Cup prepares to arrive in the English Riviera for the first time between the 24th and 28th of June.
Now, how many people listening are going, wait, what? Who? What? English Riviera?
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later. But I've never heard of the English Riviera before. Until lately. We'll talk about that in a bit. Organizers say the event will bring international competitors to the sheltered waters of Torbay, further establishing the area as a hub for stand-up paddleboarding. Kingsbridge CIC Waterborne Hub will be represented by its Waterborne Warriors team, who are set to compete in paddle polo on a Saturday of the event. On the Sunday, Waterborne Hub's owner, Crispin Jones, will take part in a solo category. Mr. Jones previously represented Team Great Britain at the 2025 ICF Stand-Up Paddleboard World Championships in Abu Dhabi. Bay's Brewery director, Peter Salmon, said the collaboration reflects the area's deep connection to the sea. Living and brewing on the coast, we see firsthand just how important the sea is to our community for work, for leisure, and for well-being, he says. Afloat celebrates that connection while also supporting the incredible work Above Water does to keep people safe. He added that the timing of the launch alongside the World Cup made it particularly meaningful. With the Stand-Up Paddleboard World Cup coming to the English Riviera, it feels like the perfect moment to bring people together over a beer that not only tastes great, but also helps deliver an important message. Above Water founder Brendan Prince said the partnership would help extend the charity's reach at a crucial time. Every year, too many lives are lost through preventable drowning incidents, and education is key to changing that. The English Riviera is a perfect place to showcase both world-class paddleboarding and the importance of water safety. And as much as people talk about, oh yeah, you know, like such and such could have been prevented because they were wearing their life jacket or PFD or did this, did that, they're really, in my opinion, isn't nearly enough education on this is what's going to happen. You need to do it. You know, you need to be wearing those. You need to be making sure they're fitting properly. You can go on and on about that. And unfortunately, there's still those that will not listen.
Too many people find them, which is like I always wear a life jacket. So yep. I've become comfortable with it. But there are options. Like, we were just talking about the new Mustang floater coat.
Oh, the Chimera.
The Chimera, which is, it has a minimal amount of foam, so it has the natural buoyancy, but it also has a secondary bladder that you pull the cord and inflates with a CO2 cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both. It's comfortable, low profile, but you can also pull the cord and it increases by 4 times the amount of buoyancy or something. Anyways, it's just...
There's options.
Yeah. Great for stand-up paddleboarding or people who would tend not to wear a life jacket for whatever reason. What did you say? It was
the Chimera was a myth?
Yeah, the Chimera was a myth.
Sorry, the Chimera is a mythological creature, which is a perfect name for this device because there's a lot of people that think PFDs are mythological.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's just, you know, my rant.
But it fits into this topic.
It does. The charity hopes the visibility of both the event and the beer will encourage more people to engage with water safety messaging during the busy summer season. So hopefully that's, yeah. If you happen to buy one of these afloats and send us a picture of it. We want to see.
Share.
Yeah. So that we're not the only ones sitting here drinking beer on a Tuesday night. So... been seeing a few things mentioning the English Riviera lately.
I've never heard the term before. I've always heard the French Riviera.
Yeah, and then I've heard like read in about 6-7 different articles the English Riviera.
Hmm.
Oh,
somebody's pushing
new, yeah. Right? So the English Riviera is a 22-mile stretch of South Devon coastline comprising the towns of Torquay, Paignton, and Brixham, renowned for its mild, sunny microclimate, sandy beaches, and palm trees.
Really?
When I think England...
I don't think palm trees.
I don't think palm trees.
Huh.
As a designated UNESCO Global Geopark, it blends dramatic coastal scenery with rich history, offering attractions like Kent's Cavern, coastal walking, and a vibrant, family-friendly seaside atmosphere. English Riviera is set around a large horseshoe-shaped bay sheltered by the rolling hills of Dartmoor, both of which provide a warm microclimate and safe shallow waters. Long sandy beaches, secluded coves, and clear crystal waters create a Mediterranean vibe and mean that water-based activities are the favorite thing to do for both locals and visitors in Devon's beautiful bay. There are plenty of activity providers who offer beginner lessons, equipment hire, and guided trips for all, with sailing, kayaking, paddleboarding, water skiing, wakeboarding, speedboat trips, coast steering, and scuba diving all available. You'll find something for everyone here on the English Riviera.
Hmm.
Tor Bay is heaven for canoeing and kayaking with open waters, sea caves, and secret passages to explore. The Reach Outdoors Adventure Center offers single and tandem kayak hire and is based at the Seashore Center near the beach at Goodrington. You can also try their Tor Bay kayak tours using sit-on-top kayaks, which are perfect for those new to the water. There are short 1.5-hour tours, half-day and full-day tours, and a picnic lunch can be provided. Oh, yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
For those looking for real adventure guided by the experts, join Reach Outdoors Wild Camp Kayak Expeditions, where you will explore sea caves around Berry Head and Sharkham Point. Catch and cook your supper and sleep on a remote beach. Protective clothing and safety equipment is provided. The calm, sheltered waters of Tor Bay are perfect for those learning to paddleboard or those looking for their next paddleboarding adventure. EnglishRiviera.co.uk for more info on the area.
It's funny, I've never heard of it.
Never heard of it before until within the last probably 5 days.
They must be amping it up and just advertising, because I always think of the French. Like
French Riviera you hear about all the time.
Never
right?
been there, but you hear about it in the movies and so on. It's like very high class.
Going down to the French Riviera.
Yes.
Can't quite afford it. I'm going to go to a different Riviera.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Canadian Riviera?
We must.
Wasn't there a car called the Riviera back in the day?
I think there was.
Right? That's about as close as I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you want to find out more about the English Riviera, go grab yourself an afloat
yes.
and sit on the beach under the palm tree and enjoy.
And support the charity. And
support the charity while you're there. Awesome. Okay, now we're going to get angry.
Yes, no. We were ranting it before we started recording about this.
Yes, we did our big rants before the show so that we can...
get it out of our system.
Yeah. Let's talk. And we got to be careful because...
There's a lot of issues.
There's a lot of politics and everything.
But we won't talk politics.
We're trying to stay away from politics, so... The number of permits to visit the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness that were never used continues to climb. U.S. Forest Service's reports. Agency said more than 40% of permit reservations for the sought-after quota season of May 1st through September 30th were never used last year.
And we've talked about them reducing the quota. There's they want fewer people able to access the area. They're trying to protect and preserve it. And even with those reduced numbers...
40%. Were not used.
Mm-hmm.
A permit is always required to enter Boundary Waters. Visitors who want to paddle and camp overnight between May 1st and September 30th required to get a quota permit through first come, first serve systems. And we even talk on our show about, hey, remember, if you want to go to Boundary Waters, permits open, the quotas
April 18th
week.
Or something. Yeah.
And most popular dates and entry points fill up quickly when the Forest Service makes quota permits available in late January. Some people reserve multiple dates, then cancel later when they decide on their plans. Others fail to cancel and their permits go unused, limiting availability for other visitors. Both cancellations and no-shows have been on the rise since 2020, says Kathy Quinn, Assistant Wilderness Program Manager for the Superior National Forest. We suspect that the cancellation rate has gone up because people are reserving more permits than they actually intend to use. Then they end up canceling the extra permits as their schedules firm up, as they watch the weather forecast, or sometimes plans just change. Forest Service reports that both no-shows and cancellations climbed in 2025 from previous year. There were 3,674 no-shows, up from 3,572 in 2004.
That's a big number.
Right? And a record high 12,096 cancellations, up from 11,244 the year before.
Well, at least they're canceling, so it becomes available to other people who wait to the last minute to try and get that opportunity.
Yeah. there's a scarcity complex, scarcity complex, where people think there aren't enough permits for everyone, Quinn says, but she said the number of permits issued for Boundary Waters has stayed relatively steady at around 26,000 annually. When people cancel permits or don't show up, it makes it more difficult for others to try to figure out how and when to visit. It gives the impression that there isn't as much access to the wilderness area than there actually is. Boundary Waters do get busy during peak months of July and August, and some entry points are more popular than others. But if people are willing to explore new areas or visit at a different time of year, there are plenty of opportunities. There's room for everybody, Quinn says, but you may not go exactly at the ideal time you were thinking or that primo entry point that you had in mind. Quinn argues urges people to cancel a permit as soon as possible if their plans change to give others a chance to use it. People looking to plan a trip should keep checking the reservation system for newly available permits. Does that sound familiar? Algonquin Park? What?
Yeah, Sandbanks.
Uh-huh. Ontario Parks, we do the same thing up here.
Mm-hmm.
Forest Service is working with the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness Collaborative, a group of people interested in the wilderness area, on possible changes to the reservation system aimed at reducing the cancellation and no-show rate. We're looking for ways to incentivize people to cancel their permits earlier, but first and foremost, only book what they actually know they can use, Quinn says.
So me and my family, it's something we've been doing for the past 6 or 8 years. We always go to Sandbanks Provincial Park for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And so we've done full weeks. We've done just long weekends and so on. But one thing we do notice is that, like, even in good weather, when we do our evening walks, we always do the loops, and there's a lot of empty campsites. But what we also noticed, because we're a rain or shine type family, we will go even if it's raining. And if there's an inclement weather, which last year was, it's like you're talking less than 50% capacity. It's like, where is everybody? Mm-hmm. We had to rush in and book what we and took what we could get, leftovers and whatever, and then it's like there's nobody here. And so on one hand, I say that. But on the other hand, we also like to plan late.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we went to Killarney last year, we booked about a week or 8 days out. And we just said, hey, what's available? We know we're going. We know we're going to Killarney. Let's see if we can patch together some sort of trip. And so some of the days were longer. Some of the days were really short. But it's like, hey, we know there's going to be cancellations, yep. So we'll take what we can get. So it does work for us because we like booking late and taking...
But that's if people cancel. If the no-shows...
Exactly. Yeah.
So I do have a big issue with people that book... I'm going to book like 4 different time slots.
Yeah.
And then I'll cancel the 3 I don't use.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have an issue with that.
I don't like, and people say, well, it's the only strategy you have. So it typically opens 5 months out. So people will book that week and going into a weekend that they want. And then once they have it booked and it's like 2-3 weeks later, they'll cancel the initial,
few days. So that they get their weekend.
They got their weekend. And so what you're doing is you're taking campsites out of the hands of people who actually would use it.
Yep.
So I don't know. Like,
Well, when it comes to the boundary water thing here, even up here with Ontario Parks, my thing, which fully wouldn't be popular, I would be interesting to know how many people are repeat offenders.
Oh, yeah.
So if you book 3 or 4 weeks and then you, this is the week we're taking. Okay, cancel the other three.
Yeah.
If you do that, you get your name on a list. And then if you do it again the next year, enjoy your week. It's the last time you will ever be allowed to book.
You're banned.
You are banned from the Boundary Waters.
Your kids will have to book it next time.
Right? Seriously. And especially the no-shows. If you no-show and then next year you no-show again.
Yeah.
I know things happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's got to be a bunch of them that are doing the same thing.
Three strikes are a type
I'm giving them two strikes because, you know what? Up your nose. I'm sure that wouldn't be very popular.
Yeah.
However, like I say, you want to, if you got that threat that, okay, no, we canceled last year, we're not canceling this year.
Yeah.
Because we got that threat of we will never be able to go again.
In a 3-year window, you can't cancel more than twice type thing or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So then you'd be 10
Then you're
more.
Going to be starting to go, oh, well, wait a minute here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if they actually change that system, you hear to hear first. There's realistically, what can you do?
Yeah.
Except there's got to be some sort of punishment for it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't even know what kind of system that could be in place to correct this. I've heard a lot of people talk about it. There's been banter about it for the longest time now, and I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if there is a solution to it. It's really difficult because people play the games that they play, right?
Yeah.
But
I would be very interesting to know if they have there's a way to tell if it is the same people. Every year after year after year after year. Because, there's times where you're like, okay, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Okay, how are all those spots booked in under 30 seconds?
I know. I'm curious about that, too.
And then, it's because the people that were able to book last week have
booked
that.
Into your week.
Yeah, have booked into the week, so there's nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the only way to do it is if you play that game, I want the last week of October. Well, I can book the second last week in October today.
Mm-hmm.
I can't book the last week till next week. So I'll book from the second last week into the last week.
Yeah.
And then when it comes time, I will then cancel that second last week. So I'll just have what I wanted originally.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. And it annoys me to no end.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting there with we didn't go up at New Year's this year to Algonquin because the only thing that was left was the dog free zones.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't care if I got a no electric. I don't care if it's got to be in the radio free.
You make it do.
But we got a dog to take with us.
Exactly.
That we're screwed if we can't get a spot out of the dog free zone.
Yeah. And it's the popularity of like Mew Lake and Silent Lake, and it's tough to get into locations like that. So people, their hands are forced. They do play the games, but unfortunately, it kind of ruins it for a majority of the other people.
Right?
I don't know a solution. I wish I did. Anywho.
It's a good thing we're not allowed to swear on this podcast.
Well, our pre-recording rant about this was totally different than
it was totally
than
different.
Our
it was not
family rant.
Friendly.
Trust me, it was not family friendly. Anywho,
I think it's one of those things. I don't know that I'll ever be able to figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know those solutions.
Unless, like I say, they keep track of the names.
Yep. Start banning people.
Repeat offenders. Well, I mean, that's a big deal because if you are right into canoe tripping and that's hanging over your head that might be banned.
You might be a bit more serious about your...
You might start be thinking seriously about it.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, I've done the exact same thing you did. You know there's going to be cancellations.
Yeah.
So you wait till the last
minute.
yeah, I'm going to go on a trip next week. Let's see what's available.
Yeah. And so I look in zones. I'll look Southern Ontario, or, you know, I'll look in Algonquin Park, or I'll look in Killarney, Temagami. It's like, I know we're going somewhere.
We're going somewhere.
Let's see what's available, yeah. And we'll see if we can string something together.
East, west, north, south. You won't know till something's available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just everything else is all the rest of the planning is different, is all the same, I should say.
Yeah.
It's just the drive time that is going to change.
Right. Are you taking a 10-hour drive or are you taking a 45-minute drive?
Yeah.
Right.
There you go. So I do like late minute because then the anticipation is not there. You're just like, ooh, what are we going to get?
Right.
How exciting this is going to be.
It's like Christmas.
Yes, exactly.
I can't wait till things get a bit more lax at the border.
Because
we have Moab on our list.
Oh, yeah.
On our list, I still want to get back to and we're get back on my list to go, but not this year. Not this year. But like I say, I already got two trips planned for this month.
Nice.
Woohoo! Yippee! It's going to be some fish and
bugs.
No!
What do you mean, no?
Well, not for me. I got my science kit packed.
Oh, yes.
I got my zebra shirt all packed and ready to go.
I never sent it, but I found a striped zebra like jacket for dogs.
Well, see, and that's what... Now you started. So if this zebra thing works and the zebra striped shirts keeps the majority of bugs off me, I am making a shirt for Athena.
There you go.
I will cut this shirt to fit around her. Get her some sort of dog shirt so that when she's sitting there around the campsite wearing this shirt, the bugs are gonna tend to leave
be fewer.
Her alone.
Yeah. Less be irritation. Fewer.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this could be a business.
It could be.
Because we know a few people that do the dog clothing business stuff, too. Dog harnesses, dog leashes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Business opportunity.
This is a business opportunity, I'm telling you. Business.
Let's go.
Alrighty. That's all I've got this week. Enough ranting and raving.
Yes,
enough of that. I need to go get some food. I need to go buy some Parmesan.
I know. I'm totally going to do that.
Right?
Sometime this week, I'm going to be making that pasta.
Let me know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you take the directions with you.
I am.
That sheet.
Absolutely.
And that's it. You know that it's got to keep some of the pasta water.
Yeah.
To make sure.
We always keep pasta water.
Yeah. All righty. You got anything else?
I do not.
Nothing? Zip? Nothing. Zero? Nope. Nada?
Absolutely not.
Hot diggity dog. if you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. And I believe the majority of sites now are not having issues with the new feed.
Yay.
We didn't hear anything.
No complaints.
No complaints. or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.